You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 oh.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Central, along with Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends. Hey, Vince, I hope you have a better show than I did just now when I mispronounced the word Dodgers. So how are you?
Usually it's me that's mispronouncing words at the beginning. So, you know, it feels a little good to be on the other side of it.
Well, good. I'm glad I could do that for you. I do feel like it's important for a Dodgers podcast to properly pronounce the word Dodgers. So I will try to fit the word Dodgers in several more times throughout this podcast. And I will endeavor to pronounce it correctly each time.
That's all we can do is strive to get better.
Yep, that's what we're here for. Today we're going to talk, Vince is going to give a little bit of a first-hand report of the Kobe Bryant Memorial thing at the Staples Center that he was at. I'm going to talk a little news about Clayton Kershaw going to Driveline, and talk about Adam Kolarik, Zach McKinstry, Ross Stripling, maybe a few other things from Monday's game against the White Sox that the Dodgers tied 2-2. Obviously the results of the game don't matter, but there's always stuff to glean from the action. So that's the plan for today. But first, we want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, Vince, not Dodgers related, but definitely LA sports related. You on Monday morning went to what was it called? A memorial service or?
Yeah, celebration of life.
Celebration of life for Kobe Bryant at the Staples Center. His wife, Vanessa, spoke. Michael Jordan was involved. Shaq was involved. A lot of stuff. I assume the Staples Center was packed. And why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, man, it was nice. You know, I didn't really know what to expect. I've been to celebrations of life that were, you know, a little bit more of a celebration than I've been to, you know, funerals. It's a little bit different feeling, but like I said, a lot of people, a lot of LA fans, a lot of Kobe fans. The area around was, you know, by 8 in the morning, it was already all packed all around. But yeah, I mean, just what you guys saw on TV, if you watched, it was similar inside, but just, you know, felt a lot more emotional, a lot more powerful, impactful. You're sitting around, you know, a lot of strangers like you usually do at sporting events, but you know, you're all sharing the same sentiments and feelings and all that. So it was nice. Like I said, Vanessa, to summon that courage to talk is, you know, very valiant of her, and I don't know if I could do it in the same spot, but you know, she spoke well. We learned a lot of different things about both Kobe and Gianna that we didn't necessarily know before. And then, like I said, Michael Jordan was a big surprise, and he kind of mentioned how him and Kobe were better friends than any of us knew. You know, and Shaq and Diana Taurasi and Sabrina Ionescu were really nice from the, you know, women's basketball side, more so for Gianna, but also they were both inspired by Kobe, so it's just kind of the full circle. So it was overall, you know, emotional, but it was a good, you know, way to commemorate them and celebrate them. And yeah, it was really nice, and I'm glad I was able to go.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't watch the whole thing. I couldn't bring myself to, basically, is what it boils down to, you know. But I did watch some clips of Vanessa, and man, that tore me up at the end when she said, "You take care of Gigi, and I'll take care of the other three, and we're still the best team." Yeah, like you said, I don't know how she found the strength to do that, but I imagine. I think most famous people's, famous men's wives are a lot stronger than we know, and I think you have to be to live in that situation. And so, yeah, pretty odd. And was there any one story or anything anybody told that stood out to you?
Not just one. You know, it was just a kind of a whole, as a whole, you just learned know, when I talked about Kobe in my like solo episode, you know, I had a little bit different relationship with him than like most people. You know, I love Kobe early on and then kind of lost him a little bit. And then I think you just gained a lot more appreciation for him as a whole today than, you know, I maybe had, taken for granted. I know somebody said that at one of the speeches. So, you know, maybe I did take Kobe a little bit for granted at some point. But yeah, like I said, everything was a nice celebration of life, as they called it.
Well, good. Yeah. Our buddy Frank Lopez said on Twitter that kind of pointed out that seems like the Lakers have handled this whole situation really well. And what Frank said that I really agree with is it seems like everything they've done has been motivated by love for Kobe and his family and wanting to do what's best for them. You know, and so this seems like a good example of that. Gave the city a chance to mourn him and to show their love to his family. And yeah, and it seems like it was all handled really well.
So. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Dodgers. From Kobe Bryant to Clayton Kershaw, we got word on Monday evening, article in The Athletic, I think it was Pedro Mora who wrote it, that Clayton Kershaw was among the Dodgers who visited Driveline up in Washington this offseason. And they talked to Kershaw about it, and Kershaw characteristically was pretty tight-lipped about it. He basically said, I'm not going to give you any details, but yep, I was there. And he said, it's more than just weighted balls. People think of Driveline as being the weighted balls, and it's more than that, which kind of implies that Kershaw did other things. But, you know, so we don't really know. The two glaring obvious things that you and I have talked about, and that I think every Dodger fan knows, that if Kershaw could do one or both of these things, it would be awesome. One is getting some of that velocity back, and two is developing a changeup. And both of those are things that Driveline could theoretically help with. So I wonder, Vince, do you have any thoughts, any guesses on if it was one of those things, if it was both of those things, or something else that Kershaw worked on when he went to Driveline?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely at least one of those things. I'm sure, you know, Jansen and Wood, we talked about before, and Jansen was more to get his mechanics down, you know, Wood kind of coming back from injury and kind of figuring out some other stuff. But for Kershaw, I'm sure he's just a thirst for knowledge right now. You know, he's lost a few miles an hour on his fastball. He's had some struggles that he hadn't had before. And part of the article is Dave Roberts saying that you know, Kershaw is getting older. He's kind of realizing that he has to adapt and kind of move on and embrace some of the new school with the old school that he already has. So at this point, you know, I think he's just trying to find out anything he can, anything that he thinks will help him. And that's, you know, better for the Dodgers and better for us as fans, because we want to still see Kershaw dominate it and be that guy. And even if he's only 90-80% of that guy he was, maybe what we saw last year is that. That's still a really good pitcher. But if he can find anything else to maybe, you know, get him back up just a little bit, that would be, you know, ideal.
Yeah. One thing Andrew Friedman said was that Kershaw expects to be better this year than was last year. And Friedman said, I wouldn't bet against him. And yeah, I mean, if you've been betting against Kershaw, you have probably lost a lot of money in the last 12 years. So it's awesome to me to see Kershaw still wanting to improve after, I mean, he got Cy Young votes last year, you know, and still recognizing that there's improvement to be made or things to regain. And so that's awesome. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Ross Stripling's outing, Adam Kolarik, Zach McKinstry, and a few other things. But first, we want to talk about Arizona. Spring training is going on. We've been watching the games. You can see the beautiful weather. If you've been watching any of these Dodger games, especially, you know, today at Camelback Ranch or Monday, it's just a beautiful place to watch baseball games. So take the opportunity, get yourself over to Arizona at some point in the next month and a half, see some spring training. I guess a month now, not even a month and a half. That's crazy. But go see some spring training. The weather's beautiful. There's a lot of nightlife. You go to a day game, then go hit the bars, hit the restaurants, concerts, whatever. do some hiking during the day. So many options to do. We're hopefully going to have Keith Law on an episode later this week to talk about his top prospects list. And Keith used to live in Arizona, and he's a foodie. And so I'll make sure when I do talk to him to get some restaurant recommendations from him for Arizona for you too. But any other needs that you have to plan your trip and to find out where to stay and where to eat and what to do, all those other things, you can plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining and keep it locked on Dodgers. All right, it's time for our obscure former Dodger of the day. And this is going to be somebody you've never heard of. And it'll kind of be two different guys because I'm going to branch from one into another. And they both played for the Dodgers, actually the Brooklyn Robins, in 1919. But they weren't teammates. One of them was gone by June, and the other one made his only appearance of his career in September. And that's the guy we're going to talk about first. Lafayette Henyon is his name. He was a pitcher, and he made his only appearance in September of 1919. Mop-up duty, the Dodgers were getting pounded by the Cardinals, I believe. He pitched the last three innings of the game, allowed two runs, and that was the entirety of his major league career. Three innings pitched, a 6 ERA. His FIP was only 315, so that's solid. But Lafayette Henyon has a pretty interesting story. He was born or went to high school in San Diego, and he was a third baseman, and they were in the city playoffs, the city tournament, and their pitcher was unavailable to pitch, and he said, "Oh, I'll pitch." And so he pitched, and he defeated the defending league champions on a two-hitter, beat them 20-0, recording 20 strikeouts, including the first 15 batters he faced. And then his next performance in the championship game, he pitched a no-hitter, faced the minimum 27 batters, and struck out 21 of them. And so that was the first two games he ever pitched, apparently, in his life. And in the newspaper, in the Pittsburgh Press, the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania Press, there was a little article the next day, or a couple weeks later, actually, after that game. And it, so where did that go? There it is. It just a little one paragraph blurb says, "Connie Mack has trained his weather eye on another future great, Lafayette Henyon, pitcher for Sherman School 9 at San Diego. This lad recently blanked Florence School 14-0 without a hit, whiffed 21 and faced but 27 men in 9 innings. Victory gave Henyon's comrades the City Grammar School title." He did not, it said Connie Mack was interested in him. He never did sign with whoever Connie Mack was managing, the A's. But several years later, he was pitching in the Western Canada League in Saskatchewan. And a Dodgers pitcher, the Dodgers sent one of their pitchers up to Canada to scout a player. That pitcher they sent up was a former, obscure former Dodger, Jeff Pfeffer. You remember Jeff Pfeffer, right?
Yeah.
And his brother, Big Jeff Pfeffer.
Yeah.
Neither of them, who was named Jeff. Well, Jeff Pfeffer was scouting for the Dodgers and pitching for them. And he went up to scout a different player. And then after the game, he was scouting. He went out for drinks with some of the players. And they said, "Hey, you should sign this Henyon kid, too." And he was kind of drunk. And so he wired his boss and said, "Hey, let's sign Henyon, too." And they did. And so Lafayette Henyon only got a job because Jeff Pfeffer got drunk at a bar with some baseball players. And then he only pitched one game. But this is getting long, but that's okay because this part gets really good. On the very same page of the Pittsburgh Press, right next to the article about Lafayette Henyon, there's an article with the headline, "Too Much Work is Harmful," with a subheading, "Players Who Carry a Little Weight Always Start Out Slowly in the Spring." And it talks about Ty Cobb and how Ty Cobb never would show up to spring training on time. And Lee McGee, who would later play for the Dodgers, he was quoted as saying that a guy like Ty Cobb shouldn't show up to spring training on time because he doesn't have enough meat on his bones. And so if he starts working too hard early in the spring, he will get worn out too early in the season. And I'm going to read you this entire quote from Lee McGee because it's awesome. He says, I can very well understand why Cobb is often late in reporting, because I know just how he must feel about working too hard in the spring. Without wishing to compare my own ability in the least with that of Cobb, whom I consider almost in a class by himself, I feel that we have very much the same sort of temperament. In my own case, I try to keep in pretty good condition all the time, even when not in the strictest training. I'm almost down to weight right now and need only a very small amount of exercise to be perfectly right. Now, suppose I go south and run around on the field and work hard twice a day for 4 weeks or so. When the season opens in the middle of April, I will be in perfect condition, but I will be sure to go stale when the real hot weather strikes us in July and August. Men who carry no extra weight cannot afford to work as hard at training camp as those who report with a lot of avoirdupois to remove. We have to hold ourselves back to keep from using up too much energy before the season starts and not having enough left to go along when the campaign gets good and warm. Cobb is full of pepper, and it is hard for him to remain idle while the other boys are out working. So he just stays away until the team is about ready to come north. When he does report, you can be sure that he will be in perfect condition. So Lee McGee, who's the other half of our obscure former Dodger, played for the Dodgers in 1919, but he specifically said, fat guys are better because then when you work hard and lose weight, you still have enough meat on your bones. So I consider that a vindication for people in my situation who have, as Lee McGee said, a lot of avoirdupois, which is a big fancy French word for big fat fatty. And so Lee McGee and Lafayette Henyon are our two obscure former Dodgers of the day. What do you think of that one, Vince?
Yeah, this might have to be, it's just his own segment one day.
Yeah, I could probably fill a whole half of a podcast with some of these old school stuff. I love old newspaper clippings. And, you know, when you see a baseball player using a word like avoirdupois, you kind of have to squeeze it in somewhere. So let's talk about some players who don't have much avoirdupois. Let's talk first about Ross Stripling, former guest, friend of the show, I believe that's what we're supposed to call him now. Ross Stripling made his first spring start, pitched one inning, looked really good. Most notable thing it seemed to be about Stripling was that he is working on a new changeup. Oral talked about it during Stripling's outing that Oral and some of the other Dodgers pitching instructors have been working with him on changing his changeup grip. Stripling said that last year he felt like he was tipping that pitch and so it wasn't effective and he kind of got knocked around. And in his interview with Alana after his outing, he said basically that they had looked at the White Sox lineup and planned out, okay, we're going to throw the changeup to this guy and this guy because he wanted to throw it against the righty, throw it against the lefty, you know, kind of use it in different circumstances. So they had all that planned out, which really struck me how much different spring training is, because the goal isn't to win or even to pitch well. The goal is to train, to practice and try stuff. So you have any thoughts on Ross Stripling and his changeup, Vince?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see all the players come back and try to find a way to be better. And you know, Stripling specifically, you know, we've talked about it a lot. He's kind of got the short end of the stick a little bit. You know, and when he was kind of traded to the Angels, you know, we were happy for him because he was going to finally get a full chance time to be in a rotation. But obviously, we were glad that the Dodgers were able to keep him. So, I mean, it's good for him to keep finding his things. And he's going to be a pretty big part of, you know, maybe not the rotation, but it'll be a pretty big part of the Dodgers this coming year. And he's always been a guy that ever since he's come in, he's been pretty effective. So he's finding ways to be more effective. That's even better for the Dodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. And he can be a really effective long man, you know, especially with some of the young guys who might be in the rotation, you know, might have occasional 3 or 4 inning starts, and having a guy like Stripling available to go a few innings after that is awesome. His curveball looked great. He threw some really sharp curves. So for a first outing spring, I was pretty pleased with that. Another thing that jumped out at me at the game was that Zach McKinstry started at shortstop. And, you know, we knew he's a utility guy, can play all over the place. But I didn't really realize, I had kind of had him in my mind as more of a Matt Beatty type, a guy who could play several positions. But, you know, seems like maybe there's a little bit of Kiki or Chris Taylor in there. He played pretty good at shortstop. He had one potential double play grounder that he did a quick double clutch. And so they only got the force at second. But then he actually had two more plays in that inning. They ended up with three straight fielder's choices all grounded to him and looked really, really good. He looked really solid. And so it got me thinking, because he is a left-handed hitter, you know, if he can fill a similar role to Taylor and Kike, these days, Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez, obviously skill sets aren't identical, but positions they play is pretty identical. And so, you know, we've said before how it's kind of weird to have both Taylor and Kike on the roster. And if McKinstry can be that same type of player, but hitting left-handed, it almost makes it even weirder to have both Kike and Taylor on the roster. And it got me thinking, I wonder if we still might see a trade sometime, you know, in the next little while of either Kike or Taylor, if McKinstry can fill that same role, except also have the a different platoon option, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it'd probably be Kike, just for the fact, you know, they signed Taylor to the small extension. Kike's in his last year. We both had not both of them being on the roster at this point. So it's definitely possible. But if not this year, then definitely, you know, in the future, if McKinstry can hold down that kind of role and Taylor's still around for another year after this, then they'll finally have like a platoon of guys that can play the middle infield. We talked about it when Jock and Stripling weren't traded with Brent Hefo. He probably could have filled a similar role to that, playing around the infield, but from, I'm pretty sure he's a left-hander, so playing from the left side. So, you know, if McKinstry can step up and be that guy, then that's perfect, because the Dodgers do have a lot of right-handed batters off the bench, especially if they're already facing that side of the platoon. So, yeah, if he can develop into something like that, then, like I said, Kike is probably gone after this year, just for the fact that they don't have necessarily a need for him anymore. But if McKinstry can come in and step in for that, then that's perfect.
Yeah. All right. Last thing I think we'll talk about is Adam Kolarik. You had an article that you read about Kolarik and his thoughts on the three batter minimum and kind of, you know, the goal for him this spring. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it was on Dodger Insider, you know, they asked Kolarik. It was basically about the three-batter rule change, and we've talked about how that's probably going to affect him the most of anyone else. And he pretty much said that, you know, he's looking for an opportunity to show himself and prove himself that he's not just a guy that can pitch to just left-handers. You know, he said his approach as a, when he does face righties, he's a ground ball pitcher, so he's not really trying to strike guys out. He's trying to get those ground balls. And if he said, if I execute my pitch, worst case scenario should be a ground ball single. Although that hasn't really been the case in his career. He does, righties do have a 849 OPS against them in his career. But he actually had faced a lot more righties. Not a lot more, but he had faced more righties overall than lefties in his time with Tampa Bay. But by the time he got to the Dodgers, that significantly changed and he faced almost only lefties. But, you know, in the article, Dave Roberts basically says they're going to give him every chance to be more of a role, not just a left-handed specialist. And, you know, if he can, he pitched the other day and he pitched against both sides and he, you know, threw a scoreless inning and gave up a hit or a walk, I believe, but then got a double play to end the inning. Not the conventional double play, but a double play nonetheless. So, you know, if we can see him do that, and he already has ideas of how he wants to attack righties, he wants to throw a sinker more, work the inner half of the plate, you know, that just brings his value even more because, like I said, with the three-batter rule, his value just changed a little bit, at least for the regular season. In a playoff series, it's still nice to have that kind of guy, you know, like you said, to get the last out of an inning against a lefty or, you know, just maybe there's a couple lefties back-to-back and he can kind of get them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think it is important to remember, like you said, that he was a loogie with the Dodgers because that's what the Dodgers needed, but that wasn't really his role with Tampa Bay. And again, you know, that's what spring training is for. They can easily get him. You figure he could probably face 50 right-handed batters in the next month. And if they time that right, you know, or at least, you know, 30 or 40. And so they can really start to get a feel for what can he do against righties. He can play with some things and, you know, hopefully become that that effective piece out of the bullpen against both sides of the plate. And they can still strategically use him, you know, bring him in with the big lefty coming up and two outs, bring him in knowing that if he gets his guy, then he doesn't have to face three batters, but not being scared to death of the idea of using him for three batters. So that would be good to see if he could do it. And I think, you know, it seems possible based on what they're saying. So that's good. The only other thing about the game, one guy that jumped out at me was Edwin Aceta, minor league pitcher. He looked really good. He's a little guy. Oral made some comparisons to Pedro Martinez. He made it clear that he's not predicting the Hall of Fame for Edwin Aceta, but, you know, stylistically and kind of the way he throws. And Aceta looked good, had some good stuff. It's really fun for me watching these minor league guys and just kind of getting a feel for them. Mitchell White on Sunday was fun to watch. You know, there's a lot of one of the best things about spring training. It can get tiresome after a while, but watching some of these young guys getting a chance. Cody Thomas also got a chance to play, hit a home run on the first pitch he saw, and then robbed a home run later that ended up being a big deal. It would have been a 2-run homer to put the White Sox up 3-2. Instead, the game ended in a 2-2 tie eventually. Cody Thomas, you know, I think people are excited about him, but I feel like it's maybe a little bit of a Jake Peter situation from a couple years ago where we all got excited about Jake Peter and turned out that, you know, he's not really a big prospect. I mean, Cody Thomas is actually older than Cody Bellinger, and so, you know, probably not a future star, but it's still fun to see the young guys get their chance to play in a big league spring training game and make the most of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think tomorrow or today now for you guys will probably be the first full game I get to watch. I haven't been able to watch it.
Well, good. I'm excited to, of course, yeah, then we probably won't be talking together tomorrow. It'll either be a solo episode or a split episode, but that's okay. You know, one way or another, you and I will get to talk about games that we both watched soon enough. All right, I think that wraps it up for us today. Thank you all for listening. We will be back tomorrow one way or another. Please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, even if you don't use it regularly, please subscribe there to help other people find us. Rate and review us on iTunes. If you have any constructive criticism for us, we would love to hear it in an email, lockedondodgers@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog. You can call and leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text anytime you want. The number is 323-863-LOCK. That's 5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you will be here with us. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you later.
Have a good one.
Say D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart. Oh, heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant? Bye!